Bookmark with Lee Chambers on Cambridge 105 Radio.
With Heffer's Bookshop, the great Cambridge bookseller since 1876.
Our aspirations, rather than books.
Hello and welcome to Christmas Bookmark on Cambridge 105 Radio with me, Lee Chambers. This is the show that talks about books and writing with a local slant. And our featured guest on this special edition is Cathy Moore, director of the Cambridge Literary Festival. Hello, Cathy, and welcome to Bookmark.
Hello, Lee. Thanks for having me.
Lovely to have you here. We'll give you a proper introduction in just a moment. But it's Christmas Bookmark. Is Christmas important to you?
Yeah, it is, because it's changed in its importance in a way. I mean, it used to be about gathering with friends, family, but you know, a lot of friends. And since my children, I have three, grew up and fled the nest, then it's become about actually that reunion. So yeah, it's a wonderful time.
So is that what's happening this year? Your children are coming back?
Yes, I mean, depending on, you know, if all of the regulations remain the same, or, you know, which I think it's going to now, then yeah, they will all be back.
And in terms of presents, do people buy you books, I wonder?
They stopped, actually, which I don't like. See, despite getting so many books in the mail from publishers, so it is still always lovely to unwrap a book. It's still always my favourite present.
And in terms of home, where you in Cambridge at the moment, or just outside Cambridge, where are you from originally?
I'm from Liverpool, actually. Liverpool born and bred, and was there until, well, I went to university and then I never went back. But actually, it probably is still where my heart is.
Because you don't have I can't hear that Scouse accent in your voice.
Oh God, sometimes it comes back, especially after a drink, or especially if I'm seeing my mates.
That's great. Can you keep that voice for the rest of the show?
People wouldn't recognise me.
Well, let's see your first choice of music in just a moment. But is music important to you?
Yeah, I've always loved music. And to be asked to choose three favourite tracks, it was one of the most difficult things I've ever had to do, because there are so many wonderful tracks which are appropriate at different times and which speak to you at different times. And yeah, it was hard to pick three. So you just choose three great ones that speak to you.
Yes, I'm sorry. I know it's. I put guests through that torture.
Yeah. It's more time and energy than I really ought to have done.
Well, let's see your first choice of music now, which is "In My Life" by the Beatles. Why this one?
I'm from Liverpool, and I thought actually, if I was picking a favourite track, there has to be a Beatles track. And the lyrics I find wonderful. It makes you remember your history a little bit, and you think back. It makes you very definitely cast back to all of the people you've encountered over the years and think of them.
There are places I remember all my life, though some have changed.
That was "In My Life" by the Beatles, the first choice of music on Bookmark today from our featured guest, Cathy Moore. Cathy is director of the Cambridge Literary Festival, an event that has been running, as we shall hear, in one form or another since 2003. Before that, she was a publicity manager at first Longman, then Dorlan Kindersley, then becoming a bookseller and events manager at Waterstones in Cambridge. Over the years, the Cambridge Literary Festival, formerly known as WordFest, has established itself not only at the heart of the cultural scene in Cambridge, but as one of the highlights on the national and international literary calendar. Held in beautiful venues around the city, many within the university, the spring and winter festivals regularly welcome over 350 writers and speakers to Cambridge each year. Honorary patrons include Ali Smith, Jill Dawson and Elif Shifak, and there is barely a leading literary figure who hasn't spoken at the festival. Well, Cathy, when you started all this in 2003, could you ever have imagined that we'd be talking about that 350 writers, honorary patrons of that calibre, and an international event?
Yeah, it is in a way a dream come true. I mean, if I'd ever had a dream to run a literary festival, which I didn't, but I guess if I'd thought long and hard enough about it, then, you know, that might have been the dream that I imagined for myself. You know, it's been very lucky, and it's been a, you know, tremendous fun, actually, and a privilege to encounter the wonderful writers that I do, and, you know, politicians, journalists, people who know the festival know that, you know, we have a full range of speakers, And it is nothing but a privilege and a pleasure, with a little bit of hard work, which is easily forgotten once the festival's up and running.
And we heard that your career before that was about books in publishing and in book selling. So books always important to you?
Yeah, I was a bit of an odd only child. I was going to say lonely child, but you know, maybe sometimes there was that too. But certainly only child. And I came from, working class Liverpool background, where unusually, actually, the house was always full of books. My dad was a great reader. Well, both my parents, but my dad in particular, and his mum, my nana. And there were always bags that would go round from household to household of, you know, sort of Dennis Wheatley, Leon Uris, Susan Howitch, Agatha Christie, Frederick Forsyth. And these bags would go from my house to my nana's house and then to my auntie Lil's house in Runcorn, my nan's sister. And for me, it was just very normal that houses would have books. And I would go to the school. I mean, the top day for me during the summer holidays was to get to the library down the road for opening, get a whole load of books, read them all and take them back before the library shut and get another load. And my children think I was a bit of a sad act. But I've always loved books.
And those names you mentioned there, I mean, those were the best sellers, weren't they, during the 70s? Big, thick doorstops of books.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, my dad kind of loved them. And, you know, and I dipped into some of them. Yeah, particularly the Agatha Christie's when I, you know, that was my kind of sneaky read. When after lights out, I would have a torch and an Agatha Christie under the covers. if it wasn't one, was it Luxembourg 108? Is that?
Oh, yes. Fab 2, Radio Luxembourg, yeah.
208, I think. Yeah.
So 2003, describe to me that first literary festival as it looked then.
Oh gosh, that is going back. Three venue. I mean, it was ambitious. I remember talking, you know, I had the idea. Actually, I had the idea when talking to Ali Smith in, I was working at Waterstones at the time, and I invited her to come in and sign copies of Hotel World because I'd made it the store book of the month. And Ali and I got chatting. I was just about to go off to the Hay Festival the following week for the first time, and she'd been the previous year. And we got chatting, and you know, the conclusion of the conversation was that why didn't Cambridge have a literary festival? And I cycled home, and by the time I got home, I thought, well, actually, yeah, why isn't there one? How hard can that be? You know, a couple of venues, bunch of authors, a bookseller, what more do you need? So that was in the May, and I was chatting to people over the summer and would say, look, you know, I'm thinking of having a book festival, what do you think? And by the time I got to September, I thought, actually, I really need to commit to this. So I, you know, then started sending out invitations, you know, I am running a literary festival on this date in these venues, would you please come? And we had, I think Will Hutton was there, George Monbiot was there, Patricia Dunker, Michelle Roberts, Ali Smith, Jackie Kay. You know, so again, still a varied lineup. We launched at CB2 with Jackie Kay on the Friday night. Actually, it was a curious lineup, the most mismatched, awful lineup. But you know, Jackie Kay kind of saved the day. And you know, you learn as you go along. You know,
well, that's a good lineup for a first festival. Did you think then at that stage this has got legs, this could have momentum?
Yes, I mean I did. I mean, we didn't have massive audiences then. I mean, I think we only took something like £1,000 on ticket sales. We had a couple of sellouts. Polly Toynbee sold out in the Arts Picture House. Actually, she was doing her book called Hard Work, which was her take on George Orwell's Down and Out in London and Paris, where she went and worked in a factory, I think. But that was sold out, I think 120. And Jackie Kay and Ali Smith did a short story event, and that was sold out. And then the others, you know, were all much more modest audiences. You know, some of them 12, 15 people, which is, you know, was not brilliant for debut writers. But certainly I thought there was enough of an appetite to give it another shot.
So to move on to that next stage, I mean, what was it like setting up a festival then? Because I suppose there was a Hay Festival, Cheltenham Festival, a couple of international festivals, but actually getting something up from the ground, just the admin alone.
Yeah, it was kind of hard work. I mean, I was a lot younger than I am now. I mean, I was, you know, in my 40s. So I had, you know, tons of energy. And I remember driving off to Ely to rent the stage for the Arts Picture House. And, you know, I went and rented it, lugged it all into my car, lugged it all into the Arts Picture House, you know, rented all the microphones and the speaks and lug them all around. And there was just a lot of lugging and a lot of running and a lot of, putting the program together, getting the program printed, getting the program distributed, you know, rucksacks, walking around town with rucksacks full of programs, putting posters up. There was a small team, a couple of friends, lovely Michelle Golder and another friend called Jane, who lived in the same village as I did. And we did most of it. Well, we did all of it between us. Yeah, it was fun.
It's been a steep learning curve.
It was, but very easy, really, in a way. I mean, very, very easy. And I seem to remember it was before I started using email. So I think a lot of it was done by letter and telephone. I can remember posting a letter to Graham Swift and then him replying by letter first time around. Yeah, but it was, yes, it's a far cry from where we are now, I can say.
And full disclosure here, I mean, I'm very, very happy to be part of the festival team. I've been a steward, a head steward, and chaired some events. It's a very happy team, Kathy, and you do take care of those who work for you, but obviously that's important, not just on a personal level, but that spills out, I think, into the festival itself and into the city.
I think it does. And I'm thank you for your loyalty all these years. I mean, how long have you been?
Yes, I think it's about 15 years. Yeah. 14, 15 years, I think I've been involved.
Yeah. I feel incredibly lucky. I mean, in so many ways. I mean, you know, Cambridge has been so receptive. And I think, you know, I suppose the reason I began the festival was because I'd recently moved to Cambridge from Crouch End, London. I came from Liverpool. So my background, a lot of my life had been spent in places very different to Cambridge. And I suppose I found there was a dearth, really, of stuff for kind of energetic 40-year-olds to do in Cambridge, other than the Arts Picture House. So really, I began the festival for, you know, me and my mates. And, you know, it went on from there. But, you know, but Cambridge was a very good place to do it. There's a lot of, you know, generous people like yourself who got involved and liked what they saw and stayed, you know, thankfully for me. And, you know, and what's not to like? You have lovely people, lovely authors, fabulous events. It's a great recipe for communality, I think.
And programming for a Cambridge audience. That's very specific, though, isn't it? That's quite challenging in some ways.
It's very, very particular. I mean, the Cambridge audience are quite, you know, demanding in their own way, which is fantastic. And if you get it wrong, then they don't turn up. You can't program just anything. And authors who might sell out venues in, I don't know, sort of Cheltenham, Bath, don't always sell out here. So that, you know, so the big, you know, the popular novelists don't really go down the storm here in the way that they do in other places. You know, we're working on that, and we are trying to build our audiences all the time, because, you know, I genuinely want to provide a festival, you know, not just for me and my mates, but for anybody who wants to, you know, to come. And, you know, we are gradually stretching. And, you know, Cambridge is a place of ideas, and that obviously extends to its population. So we use a lot of the university academics who, again, generously give their time and expertise, you know, either by talking about their own books or by chairing events. Significant people I would single out for mention there are Rob McFarlane, David Reynolds, who's history professor and former chair of the history faculty, David Runciman, head of Polis, you know, all these kind of wonderful Cambridge souls who are brilliant and add a huge amount to the festival.
And you talked about that first event being a bit of a mismatch. Obviously, over time, you've worked on that. So now you match a chair and a guest. That's a delicate balancing act.
Yeah, it is. As somebody once coined, he said, "You know, what you do is make literary cocktails. It's vital to get it right. It can, you know, change an event or make or break an event." And it's often it'll be obvious, and I'll think, "Well, okay, that's the person I want to invite." We had James O'Brien recently at our online winter festival, and, you know, the first person I thought about was David Runciman, and it was a fabulous conversation. It'll all be up on our CLF player after Christmas. But yeah, it's vital. The chair is vital.
And favourite events over the years? Because obviously, I mean, when the festival's on, I know that you can't always see every event you want, but I know you managed to see some. Do you have a favourite event?
Every event with Ali Smith in is a favourite event. I mean, Ali, you know, I don't know whether I prefer her on the page or off the page. I mean, she the way she talks, you know, quicker than anybody I know, but every word counts and every word is mind expanding. And, you know, Ali Smith in conversation with Julian Beer has happened a couple of times, and that's remarkable. A top event was, and I think I'm sure you were there, was Patti Smith at West Road.
Oh, yes.
Talking about her, the third bit of her memoir. I mean, what was so astonishing about that is, like, I knew she was going to play, to bring her guitar, and I thought she would just do a, you know, play her, you know, do a small acoustic, short acoustic number. But she did she had a pianist, and she did a full on set, and it was remarkable. So that has to be my favourite event.
That was Spine Tingling. She did an acoustic version of Because the Night.
She did, I know. And I was sat next to Ali Smith for that, and we, you know, we just kept looking at each other with mouths open and then back at her.
And as I say, leading literary figures over the year have come. Any that you haven't managed to lure here yet who you'd like to come?
Oh, probably lots. Annie Prue would be one. Donna Tartt came, actually. That was a kind of a real highlight, because, you know, I never imagined in a million years that we would manage to lure Donna Tartt to Cambridge, but we did. I'm sure there are lots of others, but I'll come back. I'll tell you if I think of them in the conversation, I'll come back.
And when it is all running, do you manage to enjoy it? So, you know, you talked about the Patti Smith event there, and I see you in others, but can you manage to relax and enjoy it?
Sometimes it depends what else is going on. Patti Smith was easy because it was a one-off event, so there was nothing, you know, because as often I'm sitting there, and, you know, although I'm present physically, mentally I'm kind of looking at the schedule to see what's coming next, wondering whether speakers are going to arrive, wondering whether the problem over at the Palmerston has sorted itself out. Not often is the answer. More so in the last couple of years. I mean, in the early days it was completely impossible because I was just zipping around, but I've got such a, you know, I've been very fortunate with the teams that I've had around me for the last few years that it becomes easier. So I have less and less duties over a festival weekend because the team take care of that. So more so in recent years.
There is always something about meeting writers face to face, isn't there? There is, I know we'll talk in just a moment about managing a festival during a pandemic, which you have done, but the electricity that you can get when a writer talks about his or her work and reads aloud from it, and a connection with the audience, that is something special.
Yes, it is. I mean, I completely agree. And it's the reason that we have, you know, Cambridge Literary Festival now, is because I took myself off, I suppose it was before 2003, to, well, I went to Hay, and I saw at Hay, and I don't know whether it was on that occasion or whether it was on a later trip to Hay, but I saw Jeanette Winterson read from Lighthouse Keeping, and she read the first chapter without a copy of the book. And I was completely, utterly mesmerised and blown away by that. But the festival I'd gone to before setting up this, which is the one that made me think, actually, you know, just hearing an author read and talk makes a book come to life, was the Manchester Poetry Festival. And I saw Jackie Kay talk for the very first time and read. And so Jackie Kay was on first, and she had a very, very small audience. Andrew Motion was on second, and he was Poet Laureate at the time. And he had a massive crowd. And I remember then thinking, well, this was nuts. You know, Andrew Motion is the more famous. Why didn't they put him on at 10 o'clock to get his massive crowd? And then they could have stayed around to go and see Jackie Kay. And so, you know, I began, you know, I just felt it. I just felt the excitement of the festival, of the live gathering, and how much listening to an author read their work and talk about it, how much injected into the meaning and emotion of the book.
And I think I've noticed that particularly in the Children's Festival. It's lovely to have seen that bit of the festival grow over the years, how the thrill that children get from meeting their authors. I remember when Jacqueline Wilson came, it was like having a rock star in the building. She could barely move. Wherever she went, she was surrounded by children.
For her, yeah. No, and she loved it. I mean, she was so generous over the years. I mean, really, really, really generous. I mean, we just filmed her. Well, we'll talk about the online festival in a minute, but she's so generous with her time with the children. I mean, she would literally, I first encountered her when I was working at Waterstones, and we had a signing. And she signed for, I think, full on 5 hours. Mm. And then she signed stock after that. You know, it's quite incredible. And she just talks to every child for as long as they want. And Yeah.
And there's quite a few children's authors. I'm thinking of Andy Stanton, My Comma Purga, who that time.
Yeah, Andy Stanton is amazing. I mean, Andy Stanton, I always think about Andy Stanton chasing children around the Union Chamber, hearing them shriek and roar with laughter. And Michael Rosen, I mean, he's for Michael Rosen, what a year he's had. But anyway, he's going to be talking about his experiences at an event next year at another festival. Not ours, but I think that's very, 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 very brave of him. And then, you know, seeing the children genuinely roar with laughter and be, you know, literally lit up from the inside out. It's great.
Well, let's take a break for another piece of music now, because we'll move on to talking about COVID and the pandemic. But this is your second choice now. This is Tracy Chapman and talking about a revolution. Why this one?
I suppose because Tracy Chapman has the most awesome voice. And, you know, again, she's somebody who I love pretty much everything that they've done. This song in particular strikes a chord because it's about wanting change, it's about social inequality and social justice and somebody wanting better for their lives, you know. And I guess there's a strain of that through the festival. You know, we're partnered by the New Statesman and who bang that particular drum, coming from Liverpool as well, where I was at a school on a council estate and I lived on the small private estate. I mean, you know, tiny little kind of, you know, Barrett type houses, but it was a private estate. So there was that kind of imbalance in my life then. And similarly, going from a comprehensive school to Cambridge, to university, it was the other way around then. So there's always been that tension in my life and desire to want to see a better, more equal society. So that's why this song.
Don't you know? Talking about a revolution sounds like a whisper. Don't you know? Talking about a revolution sounds like a whisper.
105. Cambridge 105 Radio. Kickstart your weekend.
Saturday Breakfast with Matt Webb.
I'm here every weekend to get you moving. I've the latest from the Cambridge News Desk on the hour and half hour. Problems on the A14, Newmarket Road or Mill Road? Well, if there are, you'll be the first to know in the travel. There's a full sports roundup at 8:30, including what's happening at Cambridge United and our other local clubs. Plus a look at the Saturday papers and local online publications at 10 to 9. That's Saturday Breakfast with me, Matt Webb, this weekend from 8.
If you're like me, you've got a family and a business, and you want to protect what's most important when the chips are down. With Woodfine Solicitors, that's exactly what happens. I got a bespoke legal service from a friendly, expert team. They really listened to what was going on and tailored their recommendations to my situation, which was, well, that's another story. Anyway, the best thing was that it all happened online. A few simple clicks and I had my quote. That freed up time to focus on everything else. Get the help you need when you need it most. Visit woodfines.co.uk or call Cambridge 411 421. Woodfines, cutting through the red tape.
What does your home need to feel complete? Gap Home Improvements have been helping customers give their properties that curb appeal for over 20 years. You've seen our vans in your area providing dedicated support to families across Cambridgeshire. Windows, doors, garden rooms, conservatories and warm roofs. We offer free quotations in a pressure-free environment. In person, on the phone or by video call, our consultants will help you realise your property's true potential. Call Cambridge 914 567 or visit gaphomeimprovements.co.uk today.
Cambridge 105 Radio.
Bookmark with Lee Chambers on Cambridge 105 Radio.
With Heffer's Bookshop, the great Cambridge bookseller since 1876.
Our aspirations wrapped up in books.
And our featured guest on Bookmark today is Cathy Moore, director of the Cambridge Literary Festival. So this year's festival, Cathy, a little bit different to previous year's festival, obviously because of the pandemic. When did it become obvious to you that you were going to have to think about doing something different this year?
Well, quite soon. I mean, ours was one of the first festivals to be cancelled because of the pandemic, because we came very early last April, and we very, very quickly realised that, you know, obviously that was literally cancelled. That had to be cancelled because it did. And so we quickly saved about 12 of the events and busted out something called the Listening Festival. which, you know, got a very, very good reception. All of the events were free. And then I think quite early on, it seemed to be clear that we wouldn't be doing live full time. So I think probably around about June, it looked as though we would have to remain online for November. So began to plan for that then. And we had, I think it was about 40 events at the end of November. Which was, you know, we had a tremendous response to, you know, we had about 12,000 views, which is pretty good, which is as many people as we would have, or as many, I suppose, bums on seats is the way I compare a view to a bum on a seat. And it might be the same bum on, you know, different seats. But it's, you know, comparable to a live audience, the amount of people that we get, but with only half of the events. The great thing is that we were all over the world. You know, we had viewers from all over the world.
And then I suppose on a personal level, in terms of how it felt, it was disappointing, challenging, but a bit of an arc there, a journey, as they say, that you must have gone on.
Well, it was a massive learning curve, but also hugely exciting and energy giving in a way. I mean, I hands up, I really hoped that I would retire and not have to run a digital event. Couldn't really see the point. You know, don't tend to watch them. I mean, I'd rather read a book and, you know, be quiet and do different things. But fate took a hand, and you know, the festival needed to stay afloat. You know, we were committed to it, and, you know, didn't want us to just disappear. And, you know, also that everybody's at home needing things to do. And, you know, in terms of an art form, you know, we're very, very lucky in that this particular art form, compared to opera and theatre productions, is very cheap to put on by comparison. So, it wasn't impossible for us to do that. We had a big fundraising campaign, which was hugely successful. And again, you know, thanks to the, in the main, to the, you know, brilliant audiences that we have in Cambridge who donated, you know, some of them donated their ticket money, and we had other bits of one-off donations, all of which led to us, you know, being really a viable organisation, as we needed to be judged by the Arts Council to get our £50,000 bid, which, you know, has really seen us secure until certainly the middle part of next year.
Because your income comes on the whole from ticket sales, so when, exactly, you couldn't do that, I mean, was there any point where you thought, actually, this isn't going to happen, I think we're going to have to fold?
There was, actually. That, you know, that middle summer period was very, very difficult, because we didn't yet know what we managed to. The first fundraising campaign was successful and saw us through till about, you know, was going to see us through till about sort of October. So yeah, there was a very real fear that we might, you know, we might not survive. The Arts Council money was announced, so we applied, and, you know, that was a real lifeline. You know, sponsors have been hugely generous, and we've, you know, managed to keep hold of most of the people who sponsored us in the spring, even though the festival didn't happen, by, you know, reallocating it to the digital festival online. And it wasn't a given that they would do that, but, you know, they have. And I need to give a particular shout out to the Technology Partnership in Cambridge, who have sponsored us all of these years and who are still holding firm. You know, without them, we wouldn't be festival we are now.
But I suppose when you did move online, that the short films that you've done, the silver lining of that is that you were able to visit artists and writers in situ. So Maggie Hamling, for example, you did a film at her studios.
Yeah, no, it was hugely, hugely exciting, actually, doing the digital festival in a way that I'd never imagined it would be. And we took the decision to try and just not have conventional Zooms, for not, because, you know, we all spend our days, you know, Zooming people for meetings, Zooming friends in the evening. And I wanted to add a little value to the films we were producing. So yeah, we did. We went off to Maggie Hamling's studio, which was wonderful and a, you know, tremendous event with her. We also went to Jacqueline Wilson's house in Sussex and did a great film with her. Also, Melissa Benn and Rachel Holmes, they got together in a house in North London and talked about Sylvia Pankhurst. And that, again, just felt very, very different. We also, for the rest of the events, which were mainly Zoomed, we did a kind of good edit on them. So I hired a couple of digital producers who were fabulous, and made everything possible and easy, the kind of things that you thought, oh gosh, I can't imagine how you do that. you just, you know, brief this very young person, Tom and Tilly, and they say, yeah, we can do that. Yeah, we can do that. That's easy. So, you know, it was a joy actually to learn. Well, I didn't learn new skills, but I learned what the art of the possible in digital anyway. And we did edits on the films that we did and put our branding and just made them look a little bit different to the Zooms that we're all doing all day long.
And do you think there might be some element of this that you will carry forward, maybe even to a time when hopefully we will be able to meet face to face and gather in large numbers again?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, we never now won't be digital, really. I mean, it's been that successful. I mean, in terms of the countries and the amount of people that we reach abroad, I mean, the first event that we did where that really happened was we did an event with Elif Shafak in August, and it was a live event. So we had questions coming in on the live chat from Guatemala and Estonia and California. And it really, that kind of blew my mind, because I thought, wow, you know, we really, that really is something. The other side of that as well is about people who literally, and we've had some wonderful emails from people who literally couldn't get out because they were disabled, and just had, you know, took such pleasure in being able to enjoy the festival at long last. And then there's the kind of 80-year-olds, you know, a couple of emails from them saying actually they've loved the festival over the years, but they really love not having to stand in the cold you have to get in. So, you know, so we're reaching tons more people, which is lovely.
And there's usually a festival in April. What are you going to do about that? That's a really difficult time, isn't it? Because who knows what it could
be. Well, that one seems to be perfectly mistimed. I mean, winter for me was very categoric very early on that actually we weren't going to be able to do it. And this spring is not so categoric. I mean, I think if we'd been a month later, then there would have definitely been an attempt to do a big full-on live festival. But I think where we are at the moment is holding out hope that we'll be perhaps able to do a couple of live events, but probably in the main it will be online. And I think any live events we do, I mean, we will either live stream or certainly record and then stream them later.
Well, let's go to something more upbeat. Let's go to your third choice of music now, which is Earth, Wind and Fire in September. Why this one?
Ah, oh, why not? I mean, is there a better track to sing along to or dance with? I know, it's just because it makes me feel joyous and happy.
Keep
And our featured guest on Bookmark today is Cathy Moore, director of the Cambridge Literary Festival. Cathy, just looking back over 2020, there's still lots of brilliant books produced, published, awards given, despite everything that was going on. Literary highlights. So we had the novel of the year, the Costa novel of the year was Jonathan Coe, Middle England, which I know was a book that you...
Great novel, yeah, and great event actually. Jonathan Coe with Helen Lewis talking about it. I don't know if you saw that interview. Yeah, it was great. It was the first sort of post-Brexit book, angry book.
And what about Shuggie Bain, who won the Booker by Douglas Stewart? Have you read that one?
No, I haven't actually. I've got it on my kind of, you know, kind of pile at Christmas. And actually, it arrived, and I don't know, I hadn't seen it. I hadn't seen it in the shops before it won, well, because we don't go to the shops anymore, not very often anyway. But it is massive. It is a big, thick tome. So I'm looking forward to, I think, you know, good on him, actually. It sounds like a tremendous book, and I'm hugely looking forward to reading it.
And a couple of series, important series, finished this year. So Ali Smith finished her quartet, her Seasons quartet, and Hilary Mantel finished her trilogy of Thomas Cromwell novels. Hilary Mantel, not on the Booker shortlist, which I think was a shocker, actually.
I think, you know, she's had it twice, and I think the shortlist was, you know, the Booker were focusing on, you know, the subject of the moment, really, which is quite right. It was a different, you know, more diverse judging panel, and I think the list reflected that, and I think it was a brave list, and I think Shuggie Bain, well, I haven't read it yet, but I'm hoping that he will be I will consider him to be a deserving winner.
And Ali Smith, that quartet, I mean, that's a remarkable achievement, isn't it? We mentioned her before, but all of those books, stunning.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I have got a big list for Christmas. I haven't read some yet, but read all the others. And, you know, autumn, I think, well, for me, autumn is still the best. So perhaps summer will top it. But I've loved all of them.
And Waterston's book of the year was Hamlet, Maggie O'Farrell. You read that one?
Yeah, no, I haven't. Again, on the pile.
And the Bailey Gifford Prize, which I know the festival has a particular relationship with, that was 1, 2, 3, 4, The Beatles in Time.
Yeah, by Craig Brown. Again, a great winner. He did an event for us for Winter Online, which was lovely. If you haven't seen it, then you should. And I mean, the Bailey Gifford Prize, actually, I think Bailey Gifford absolutely saved that prize. I mean, it was formerly Samuel Johnson, and their kind of money ran out, and Bailey Gifford came along, and I think they've really transformed it. The shortlist they come up with is hugely eclectic. You know, last year's winner was a great one. It was Hallie Rubenheld and the Five Victims of Jack the Ripper, and, you know, Craig Brown this year, you know, alongside a book about the brain, and a book about, you know, sort of slavery. I mean, it's a, you know, very varied list.
And the Festival Book of the Year. So this is a new award that's been established?
It is. I thought, oh, actually, back time. Why don't we have a go? And it was a kind of hands down winner. Dara McAnulty, Diary of a Naturalist. I mean, Dara McAnulty, for those who haven't heard, is I think he's 16 now, but he was 15 when he wrote this diary. And he just writes about the natural world like nobody I've ever heard. I mean, when I read the book, I couldn't believe this was being written by a 15-year-old, and assumed he must have had some help. How wrong I was. I mean, watching him speak in the event with Rob McFarlane that he did for us for our winter festival. I mean, most eloquent, passionate, sensitive, clever. You know, he was quoting Seamus Heaney, T.S. Eliot. I mean, he's genius. I mean, you know, and completely steeped in the natural world, and, you know, and his fears for it.
Favorite books ever, if you're saying to somebody, go on, give this one a read.
Gosh, that's a big question. It's also a lot of books, but books that kind of stand out for me, probably a book that not that many people have heard of is the one that I always press into the hands of people, and it's something called The Book of Ebenezer LePage by G.B. Edwards. You heard of that?
Never heard of that, no.
It's a really wonderful, wonderful, heartwarming book about an 80-year-old man who's lived on Guernsey all of his life, and so it's his story, and it's him talking about well, looking back on his life and all that's entailed, but also it's very historical in that it's set against the backdrop of the occupation of Guernsey and you know what happened in Guernsey and all of those years. And it's, yeah, it just, if it, you know, it makes you cry several times. So yeah, it's a wonderful read, and everybody who I've ever given it to has completely loved it.
So that's G.B. Edwards, the book of
Ebenezer LePage. And you know, there are so many more. I mean, you know, Ali Smith's Autumn is on there. You know, going back to my, you know, social justice and inequality, The Rugged Trousered Philanthropist by Robert Tressel. Best book a couple of years ago, The Overstory, Richard Powers, you know, which is, well, it's a book about kind of trees and conservation and climate change, essentially. But it's, again, a tremendous novel, you know, six central characters who are all united by this desire to, you know, save the trees and save the planet. Again, you know, tremendous read, you know, deserved all of the good reviews.
I read that. I do recommend that as well. That's a beautiful book.
Yeah, and important too, I think. And I think you can't just put it down and not be changed a little bit. And I think that's, you know, that's the great thing about, you know, a really good book. You know, they can change you in some way, or change your opinion, change your view.
What about poetry? Are you a poetry fan?
Not really, actually, to my shame. But there are certain, I mean, you know, Carol Ann Duffy, I absolutely think she's wonderful. And I think she was a terrific poet laureate. I mean, hugely, hugely generous, hugely not grand. And, you know, I mean, my favourite volume of hers is Rapture, which actually is, it's a kind of, it's her breakup poetry book. And yeah, I think everything she writes is really quite wonderful. I'm keen to see, actually, so talking about books that are around now, I'm keen to read the Margaret Atwood's, she's done a poetry book called Dearly, sort of an end of life poetry book. I mean, she lost her husband. Actually, it was the year that the year she was in London for the Testaments, and he actually died in London. And so that's getting good reviews. So I'm looking forward to reading that.
And what's your sense of the publishing industry at the moment in COVID? When people are reading more, is the publishing industry okay as you see it?
I think it is. I mean, I think again, you know, a bit like literary festivals, we've been able to continue in some form, you know, unlike a lot of art, you know, a lot of the other arts which just haven't been able to open their doors. But I think publishing has really thrived, you know, and book selling. I was in chatting to David Robinson in Heffers the other day, who was proudly standing there. I don't know if you've been into Heffers recently. They've had a complete makeover on the ground floor, and it is spanking. It looks, you know, looks amazing. He was kind of proudly kind of stroking his new tables and layout. And yeah, I've been there, I think, twice this week and come out with armfuls.
And we've got Heffers, and we've got so many good writers in Cambridge as well. It seems that crime writers in particular, we seem to have a cluster of crime writers in Cambridge. Alison Bruce, Sophie Hanna, Geeta Lodge, Christabel Kent.
Yeah, is it Geeta Lodge? I was called a Geeta Lodge. Right, I read her, the first one. I've read two of them. I've read the first two. I thought they were both brilliant.
Yeah, we were very lucky, aren't we? Yeah. Well, we're coming to the end of our time with you, sadly, but we'll ask you, first of all, what are you reading at the moment? It's a question we ask all our guests here on Bookmark.
I am reading a book called Memorial by Brian Washington. It's an American novel, and it's flagged up as Atlantic Books Super Lead for next year. And I think it's publishing in January. So that's what I'm reading. And I think I'm going to invite him because, you know, not only do we get viewers from all over the world, we can also get authors from all over the world now. That's the other side of the whole digital thing.
And what a great job. You can read a book and you think, I want to find out more about this. Yes, go on, I'll ask.
Yeah, exactly. No, it is. I mean, it's not a bad thing to have rocked up doing. Mm-hmm. Very, very lucky.
Thank you, Kath. We'll hear your last choice of music in just a moment. But heads up that our next show, which is on the 10th of January, our featured guest is Seb Folk, talking about his book, The Light Ages, A Medieval Journey of Discovery. We'll also hear from Daphne Astor and poet Anna Selby about the launch of Hazel Press a new independent publisher of poetry. And Mark Dadd chats about his autobiography, Queer and Catholic. So it's a very eclectic show. I think medieval ages, poetry, Catholicism, sexuality, something for everyone, I'm sure. Have a great Christmas and New Year. We hope that you get all the book presents that you want. And we'll sign out now with your last choice of music, Kathy, which is Driving Home for Christmas by Chris Rea. Why this one?
Because it's what the kids always play, my children always play when they're heading home. Adam, my eldest, is coming home tonight, and the girls will follow on shortly, Amy and Jessica.
They're lovely to talk to you, Kathy, and have a great Christmas.